Hey everybody, this is Pete Worrell from Bigelow, and I'd like to welcome you to this episode of the Positive Enterprise Value Podcast. Have you noticed, as I have, some private companies successfully transition through all of the evolutions and revolutions they have over the years in leadership, management, separately from leadership, even ownership? Some, in changing environments, end up with terrific new majority owners. The EOMs moving gracefully into the next interesting and rewarding chapter of their lives, surrounded by friends, with their positive legacy assured, their independence powered by the fortune they just realized. Others' outcomes can look more like a train wreck. Is it luck, or is it more than luck? We think it's more than luck. In over 40 years, I've had the fun of meeting with thousands of entrepreneurs and working closely with hundreds of them. So in this podcast, I interview some of the most high-performing, successful entrepreneur owner managers on the planet from both the for-profit and not-for-profit sectors to learn about their experience. Today, I have the great fun of interviewing my friend Joe Polish. Joe almost needs no introduction, but I'm going to give you a little of anyway. He's the founder of Genius Network, one of the highest-level CEO peer-to-peer groups in the world for entrepreneurs. Joe's also has a organization called Genius Recovery, where his mission is to change the global conversation of how people view and treat addicts with compassion instead of judgment, and to find the best forms of treatment that has efficacy and share those with the world. Joe's taught me a lot about how the very character, the temperaments of entrepreneur owner managers working within this mass popular culture can sometimes make us feel isolated, alone, lonely even. And we're potential for reaching for self-medication. And Joe has seen that and figured out how to work with entrepreneurs to overcome that. I had the fun of interviewing Joe online and talking about our businesses together. You'll hear us talk back and forth about some of our work we've already done together and some of the work that we are going to do together. Joe has a number of terrific books, the most recent of which is called What's in It for Them, a book that absolutely changed my life in terms of how to think about relationships, both personal and professional. I've been trying to get Joe on the Positive Enterprise Value podcast for over a year, so I'm thrilled that he's here with us today, and I hope you enjoy every minute as much as I did. Here's Joe Polish. You know, we all go through chapters in our lives, don't we? How many chapters have you had, and what chapter are you in?
Boy, that's an interesting question. How many chapters have I had? It seems like I've had hundreds of chapters, but if I had to break it down to, there was, you know, childhood, crazy teenagers, trauma, being an addict, learning, starting a business as a carpet cleaner, learning marketing to get me out of the trap of being a struggling business owner. Not that I've ever not been a struggling business owner. I don't know any entrepreneurs even that are quote unquote successful that are not struggling, because there was stages in to put it in the frame of chapters. So I'm trying to think, there's probably like 5 or 10 core ones. But the
And what would you name the chapter that you're currently in?
War and Peace.
All right.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I do many things to try to find the science fiction writer Robert Heinlein said, you can have freedom or you can have peace. Don't ever count on having both at the same time. I think that's the way to quote it.
I've never heard that, but I resonate with that so strongly.
Yeah, yeah. Whew. So the question is, can you have freedom and peace for long periods of time at the same time? Because everyone could argue, well, of course you can meditate and you can be free. Well, yeah, and if you're surrounded in a world that there's tyrants or there's people that are trying to take away your freedoms or they're hurting people that you care about, I mean, if you're really isolated from humanity and you're whatever, you're out in nature for long periods of time and you're protected and you're safe and you've got food and you've got, you know, whatever, you've got shelter, you can make the argument about that. But in terms of living in the world, trying to be an achievement-focused entrepreneur, I mean, I wake up every day and there's battles I have, and I'm always trying to, it's the whole, you want, it's not about winning the battle, it's about winning the war and deciding what battles you're going to get into and which ones you aren't. You know, so I think in metaphors. I definitely, the war for me is, I got a new initiative with my foundation, Genius Recovery, where we're going to put physical recovery kits in over 2,000 pharmacies in America, where many people go to get the drugs that they are addicted to. And we want to give people something that will mostly for family members that have, you know, because there will be people that have addictions that will get the recovery kit, but most of it will be guidance and direction for people that are have loved ones or children, employees that are struggling with addiction and they don't quite know what to do. And we also have to figure out how to not do cruel optimism, right? Well, I'm not going to do cruel optimism. Let me say what I mean by that. I didn't come up with the term cruel optimism. Don't remember the woman's name. You can do a Google search, just a site exactly. There's many videos and stuff about it. But the term cruel optimism and the way that I think about it is there's a lot of speakers, seminars, books, ads, products, services that promise something and it makes it seem a lot easier to do than it is. Like you're going to get rich quickly and you don't have to work, or you're going to lose weight by just taking this pill or reading this course. The world is filled with cruel optimism. And one of the things that I want to make sure is that no one thinks that they can pick up a little physical recovery kit and that's going to replace a recovery program. The best we can do is direct people to resources that will help them. But they got to, you know, it's hard. Addiction recovery is one of the hardest things that anyone could ever do. But living a life of addiction is harder. So
you and I just talked about this chapter might be called War and Peace, Joe.
Yeah.
And I love that. And you talked about you don't know any entrepreneurs who aren't struggling. I was the other night at a dinner party at my house, and I had some of my neighbors there. And one of my neighbors is a 82-year-old entrepreneur. Another one is a 50-something psychologist. And we were chatting about our lives and what was going on. And they said, do you have a word that you would describe where you're doing in your life right now? And I said, I guess I come up with the word struggle. And Joe, you should have heard how they jumped on me. They said, struggle? Well, you're doing everything wrong. You're going to try to bend the world to your ego. I said, no, wait. What I meant by struggle was I try to bring value to the relationships that I have. And in so doing, sometimes it takes coordination among people. That's a bit of a struggle. Sometimes it takes negotiation. That can be a struggle. Sometimes it takes capital raising. That could be a struggle. I'm not saying struggle is a bad thing. I'm just saying it is, if you ask me where I am in my life, that's the word I come up with. So I'm so happy to find you say struggling doesn't have to be a bad thing, because they actually made me feel a little bad.
Okay. That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Let me speak to that. So when I recently saw you and we were in a gym in another city, working out in an event.
Yeah.
We're both struggling. You know, we're struggling to lift weights. We're struggling to exert ourselves because there are certain factors of exerting effort that provide growth. And we were struggling, but we're struggling because we wanted the growth that comes with it. And so, you know, some people get hung up on semantics. I had this young, really smart, 24-year-old friend of mine who I've helped with his addiction recovery. And he's a very functional, high character, smart, driven, sharp, infinitely more intelligent in terms of, you know, he's an engineer. I mean, than I was his age. But we've come together through, you know, mutual relationships and stuff and how we ended up meeting. Very bright guy. And he was over my house about a year ago. And he said, do you try to be a good person? And I didn't immediately give an offer. So, of course I'm a good person. I don't try. I just, you know, and I thought about that question and I said, yeah, I actually think I try to be a good person. There's a part of me that wants to just go out and be reckless and, you know, eat whatever I want to eat, do whatever I want to do. However, there's many things that would be fun, but they're not going to be very good for me, and they're not going to be very good for other people. You know, my brain could certainly conjure up all kinds of dangerous activities that have a real big dopamine hit to them, but, you know, it wouldn't have good consequences for myself or other people. So I thought, yeah, I every day I strive to make decisions to be a better person, to be a good person. And a lot of people would argue with that. They're like, well, what do you mean? You know, just like struggle. I think people that would be the most against it are ones that actually secretly struggle the most. What I believe is that I use a lot of self-deprecating humor. People today, I guess, scold me less than what they used to. And what I mean by scold is I would basically say shit about myself, or I'm like, oh, I'm being stupid. That's negative self-talk. Why do you beat up on yourself? And part of it, I'd say, first off, I do it because it's kind of funny. You know, it's sort of one of the ways I present myself. Secondly, it's the trick that I play on my own brain to not believe your own PR. I mean, I've seen my friends that have gotten a little bit of fame, New York Times bestsellers, make a lot of money, as you've seen, have a big exit, and all of a sudden there's this sort of ego thing of better than this person, or they give a great presentation, or they wrote a really great book, and they have a bunch of fans, they have a big following online, and people start telling them how great they are. And it reminds me of this Kekich credo from my friend Dave Kekich, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. He was a dear friend of mine since 1992, I think was the first year I met him. And he spent half of his life in a wheelchair, paralyzed from the chest down. And this is a guy that in his mid-30s, in the 1970s, had all of the external trappings of success: multimillionaire, house in Huntington Beach, beautiful girlfriend, convertible Mercedes, great physical shape. He told me he used to jog down, you know, Manhattan Beach, in Huntington Beach, you know, where you would go miles and only see a couple of people jogging. It was not a big thing back then, like to exercise. And he got in a freak accident. Back then, they didn't have the technology to do the surgery to fix him. He lost the ability to walk. He traveled, you know, the world in a wheelchair trying to find a cure, anyone that could help, you know, fix his paralysis. His business partner stole millions of dollars from him, lost most of his money. His girlfriend left him. He lost everything, and here he was in a wheelchair. And he wrote 100 credos called Kekich credos, Dave Kekich. And one of them was, things are seldom as bleak as they seem when they're going wrong, or seldom as great as they seem when they're going well. Lighten up, you'll live longer. And the coming from him, I interpret that as like, you know, don't take yourself too seriously, and there are things you want to take really seriously. It's a sort of contradictory thing, but we have those. There are certain things in life. Yeah. So the reason I bring all that up is that I use self-deprecating humor because I never want to take myself too seriously. I also want to be relatable to people and let them know that I don't have some ego that requires me to think that I'm somehow above somebody. I judge my inner circle friends. How are people that are more powerful treat people that are less powerful than them? Do they say thank you to a server when someone opens the door? Do they say thank you? Do they have common human courtesy? How are they front stage versus how are they backstage? Are they abusive to their teams? That tells you everything about a person. And so, you know, yeah, I'm struggling all the time. I'm always trying to be a better person. And having said that, I have a greater life because of it. I think I'm more level-headed as a result of it. And you know, people get hung up on semantics because they'll hear a word and it triggers a different meaning for them. We also have to know that too, because struggle for me might be a different meaning than someone else. And so there could be a negative or a positive, you know, association with a word. And so, yeah.
Well, those are great insights. Good, very good nuances. You know, many people know you as a marketer, a leader, an entrepreneur. If you were going to describe yourself by using a noun or two, describing yourself professionally as what you're doing right now, what would you say? What words would you use?
I'd probably say a connector, even though I never often referred to myself that way for years, even though people would describe me like, you're a great connector because you connect.
Yeah.
And that
really, I'd say super connector.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard people have called me the world's greatest connector and all that sort of stuff. And I'll be like, well, there are people that are certainly, you know, way more connected than me, and depending on how you define connection. I say connector because I'm curious. I'm a curious connector. One of the reasons that I really am always, I'm interested in so many things. It would be weird to most people that are, cannot, I'll try to describe some of the things that I think would be weird. I like going to dollar stores, even though I haven't been to one in a while, and just walking through dollar stores and looking at all of the stuff, all the cheap inventory that who knows where all this stuff comes from, companies that couldn't sell their inventory, so they sold it at the big warehouse, you know, whatever, however it shows up there. But I'm a big direct mail guy. And, you know, my late friend Gary Halbert, who was this crazy copywriter who you either loved him or you hated him, and he was a loose cannon. We used to talk about addiction all the time. The guy's absolutely struggled with addiction, although in his life he didn't understand or realize that. But he would say that, you know, people of America and all over the world for that matter sort their mail out over a wastebasket. And it even goes into the APAL, which is everything that's personal or appears personal, or the BPAL, which is junk mail or appears like junk mail. So in order for a direct mail campaign to work in marketing, you want to get it into the APAL so it people will open it and hopefully read it. And one of the things that you can do in direct mail is you can attach things to the top of a letter, like a dollar bill or an aspirin or a balloon or a popsicle stick or a stuffed animal or whatever. So most people will go into a dollar store and they will see a bunch of junk. What I see is a bunch of triggers to convert people into multi-thousand or multi-million dollar marketing campaigns if you know how to see what a lot of people consider junk, but you actually know what to look for. I mean, I've even done a whole video years ago with Dean Jackson, who I do the I Love Marketing podcast with, on using grabbers. So grabbers are things that grab people's attention. So I'll go through dollar stores and I'll look for stuff. I'm a person, if I ever watch TV, which I rarely do, I'll watch commercials and look for how they try to persuade and influence people than I will even TV shows. I will drive through strip malls and just look at all of the other stores because I'm fascinated with commerce. I'm fascinated with entrepreneurship. I'm fascinated with all of these people. Some people are just like, I'm going to make it up and make it real, which is our friend Dan Sullivan's line. And I'm going to start this random business, or I don't really quite know all of these things, or I don't want to figure out all these things, so I'm going to franchise a business. So I'm fascinated with entrepreneurship. I'm fascinated with all the different things that people do. I think most people that are commercial palm readers or psychics are, you know, a bit con artists, but I'll still go and oftentimes just sit down and listen to them because I'm so curious to what they do and how they do it, always with a skeptical sort of approach to not fully discount it, because do I really know, right? But to get in the conversations with people, even ones that have beliefs that are the polar opposite of mine, because you don't change anyone's mind by arguing. So I'm just insatiably curious. And through the curiosity, I'm able to learn and discover and be excited. And I don't know if it's a dopamine hit for me, because dopamine people think is like the pleasure neurotransmitter. It's really the anticipation. It's anticipation. So I when I was an addict, my anticipation used to destroy my life. Now in recovery, it's like I try to anticipate what's really good, what's really helpful, who's creating value, what are all the neat things that are happening in the world. So because of that, I'm exposed to a lot of stuff. I meet a lot of people. And I'm able to help a lot of people too through that those connection and curiosity skills.
So when I said to you, what words would you use? You and I use the word super connector, curious, fascinated by entrepreneurs. My vocabulary would be also you're a learner, you are a student, yeah. You're a teacher. You're particularly fascinated by the domain of persuasion and sometimes persuasion.
Yeah.
Is this what you thought you were going to be when you were a kid?
No.
I mean, what do you think you're going to be?
You know, Pete, it's really hard to say because I had such a traumatic childhood.
And were your parents entrepreneurs?
Well, my mother was a former nun. She left the convent because she got ill. I met my father in church. She wrote some of the very first books teaching children how to read using the phonetic method. And my mother's books taught millions of children how to read. And unfortunately, she died at 41 years old when I was 4 years old. And I mean, very sad. My father lost the love of his life, so he could never settle down. He never recovered from it. He was a locksmith. We lived in trailers about half my life. We weren't, we're lower middle class. My father did the best he could for a guy who had, injuries from the Army and in constant physical pain, a lot of mental anguish. But he was definitely a business owner. He, kind of do it all yourself, not hire people. I mean, I only vaguely remember him having a couple of people that would assist him with stuff, but I don't think he ever had any real employees. So,
and you said you moved a lot.
Yeah. Every year to 2 years, my entire childhood, we moved to different parts of Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, always on the, kind of Southwest.
What part. Kind of student were you?
Not very good. I was shy. I was scared. I was introverted. I didn't like school. I was bullied a lot too. So my ability to be a good student was probably inhibited from the uncertainty of my childhood. As soon as I would make some friendships because I had an older brother, 4.5 years older than me. We would uproot and go to another town. So I was constantly in a state of shock.
Did you work at an early age?
Yeah, I delivered newspapers. I cleaned, I'd clean houses. I would paint, addresses on curbs. I don't know if you ever did that as a kid. All the stuff.
No,
that
people, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if young people do that stuff anymore, but cut lawns. Just all these crappy little jobs. I would, go.
Were you a good employee?
What's that?
Were you a good employee?
I think I was. My first job was working at a pet store called Fish Warehouse. And it was in that was when we were in Chandler, Arizona, right on the border of Mesa, Arizona.
Yeah.
And I used to have to clean. I used to know the names of all of the tropical fish, mostly freshwater, some saltwater. And there was 150 aquariums in that.
Wow.
Store. And
that's a lot of cleaning.
Oh man, I think I was getting paid like $5 an hour, $4 an hour. So, and it was this grueling work and it was grungy. And the guy that owned the place was one of the biggest assholes. I remember I accidentally broke one of the aquariums, which was one of the small aquariums, no fish one. It was like underneath the aquariums that had the fish in it was the ones that people would buy. And I was mopping the floor and accidentally cracked one. And I remember he made me pay like retail price, which was not a lot. It's probably like $15 or $20 for this, aquarium that cost him like $4 or something.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what a jerk. I worked my ass. Yeah. I was a good employee, but the owner was abusive and yeah. But I worked hard.
And do you, as you're growing up and you're thinking back about your growing up times and some jobs you had, do you think you learned entrepreneurship, or do you think it was in the gene somewhere?
Gino Wickman, I'm not sure if you know Gino. He wrote
yes,
Action sure. EOS. So Gino's a friend of mine, and we've actually done podcasts on this. And I interviewed him here at Genius Network on this same topic. Is it learned, or are you born with it?
Yeah.
And I'm of the mindset that you're born with it. I don't think it's nature or nurture. And what I mean by that, and let me piece together a couple of things. I'll try not to make it too long of a tangent here. I think I can do this quickly. So there's a book called Driven, written by Doug Brackman, who is one of my Genius Network members. And Doug, I think, wrote that book in 2017. And he talks about the hunters and farmers, that there's, 5 to 10% of the population is the hunter gene. It's the D2 D4 gene. I can't, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a genetic expert. I can't go into details on it. Doug does a better job in his book about it. But he talks about how, the hunter has reward receptors in the back of the brain that don't light up. And so the people that are usually considered type A, high quick start, ADD, distractible, a lot of the entrepreneurs in the world are hunters, the go-getters, the hustlers, and the farmers are not. And so I definitely think I have the hunter gene. So
yep.
I'm a driven, and not all entrepreneurs are hunters, right? There's some very peaceful, calm people that build businesses. I just think there's obsessive based business owners or entrepreneurs and more mission based. And there's probably better ways to describe it, but the ones that are driven have the most divorces, the most personal problems, the a tendency to addict, be addicted or be heavy drinkers, bigger risk takers. However, if you have good boundaries and good strategy and good team built around those people, those are the ones that change the world. You know, the right. obsession base versus the mission base are the Steve Jobs of the world, the Elon Musk of the world. But if those people have poor boundaries or they're too reckless, if they don't check themselves, they wreck themselves. And oftentimes they don't do a good job of checking themselves. They don't do a good job of taking care of their health. So oftentimes they will, you know, in worst case scenarios, they'll start wars. They'll be in prison. They'll hurt other people. In best case scenarios, they are the ones that create and innovate the things that we all oftentimes take for granted and are oblivious to, you know, how much advantage that they bring to the world. So, yeah, I mean, I think I had a tendency to be studying business books and how people figure it out. Early on, I just wanted to, I somehow got that which is not earned is seldom valued. And so I didn't want to be given something. Not that I would reject it. If someone wanted to give me a pile of money, I'd be like, yeah, that'd be great. However, I would be thinking how to put it to good use, not how to spend it and buy shit for myself.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think my life would change that much, but who am I to say? Because it's not happened to me. If someone just somehow said, oh, here's $1 billion, Joe, I'd probably do a lot of the same stuff that I'm doing now. I'd probably go away for a week with a notepad and say, okay, what decisions do I make to not screw up stuff? And, you know, what should get my, as I call in my second chapter of my book, you know, Tammy, where do I best now put my time, attention, money, effort, and energy? And if we're given extra time, what do we do with it? If we somehow get extra attention, what do we do with it? If we have a lot of money that comes into our lap, how do we best utilize it? Effort, you know, I go to work out at this gym called Mountainside Fitness, and there's a sign on the wall that says, effort is your responsibility. I think it's a great line. Effort is your responsibility. And, you know, energy.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm an entrepreneur that I think was kind of had that, but I've spent a lot of, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So I spent a lot of time, you know, learning, reading. I've read over 1,000 books. I go to more seminars, done a lot of therapy. I mean, all kinds of ways to learn how to be a more effective entrepreneur.
And why Genius Network? What's the origin story there?
I was always really good at being curious enough to know that other people are smarter than me and have different capabilities that I don't have. And I would bring groups of people together to talk about marketing and brainstorm. You know, like some of the earliest mastermind groups that were in, you know, the business world, I would attend and I would also help put together. I mean, I cannot tell you how many thousands of people have probably started mastermind groups as a result of coming across something I put out there or someone that I trained to do it, or unfortunately people that have stole stuff from me and have polluted the whole world of masterminds. Like a mastermind group is a discussion group. It's a dialogue. A lot of people now have seminars. They just call them masterminds where it's nothing but a bunch of people speaking and there's no relationship with the audience connecting with each other. And those are not really masterminds. Those are seminars, but people have kind of co-opted the word. You know, a lot of things are being called things that they're not. I mean, how many people are using the word science as a way to gaslight people with things that aren't real science today? I mean, it's nonsense. Right. So to go back to the question, though, I learned the most through discussions with other people. I read, I learn, I listen to a lot of audio, always have. I've always been in that state, but the origin of Genius Network is it first started out as an interview series where I would interview people. Now, this is going to sound really ridiculous, but you got to understand I was in my 20s when I started this. So I learned that the moment you start, let's take right now, we are recording each other. And if we were just talking and not having like a reason for this recording to go out to other people, it would be a completely different conversation. We'd still talk about the same stuff, but I'd be rambling more than I normally ramble. It would be more casual. But knowing that there's potentially an audience that is going to hear this, I want to say something that I hope would be insightful, answer your questions, be valuable, and people would hear it and say, oh, okay, that's a perspective that might be helpful. I mean, I genuinely want anyone listening to us to hopefully either be humored or to learn something maybe. And I learned that the moment you put on a recording device around a group of people, they all get more serious. They all get more focused. Now, when I say serious, they could be comedians. They'll just become more funny. That's what I mean by serious. They just treat it differently. And so when I would put together a group of people all with the intention of learning something, results would be created. And I also go to 12-step meetings and have gone to 12-step meetings for a long time. And there's a reason behind 12-step groups. People want to share experience, strength, and hope, so that struggling with addiction, they're helping each other out of one of the hardest things to do. And so there's a lot to be said about discussions and putting people into a group that either are ambitious or have mutual suffering. And when you put entrepreneurs together, you're talking a lot about mutual suffering. That's why I think, we totally hit it on the struggling thing, because Vietnam vets that were going and seeing, therapists in Vietnam, that would help to a degree, but the moment they put them in with other vets that have been in the war, the mutual suffering and their ability to bond and connect with each other because they all been through the trenches, they would get even greater connection and greater bonding and I would argue incredible healing in ways that they couldn't otherwise. So it brings community. It brings community of like-minded and really driven entrepreneurs are lonely. And they're tribal. If they are alone and isolated, they don't feel good and they don't perform well. And they're tribal. They're pack animals. And if someone betrays them, they take it way more seriously. Like a hunter that is betrayed takes it way more seriously on a psychological level than a farmer does. Genetically.
Yeah.
According to Doug Brackman again. So the origin is I would put together all these groups, but I never had organization. I remember bringing, a bunch of Gary Halbert, John Carlton, all these great copywriters, Brian Tracy, come to my house. You remember, Brian Tracy, big speaker, come to my house and, we'd have these great events and people when are you going to do that again? And then one day I was on the phone with Robin Robbins, who runs a big business, huge multimillion dollar coaching group. She's the top marketing consultant for independent IT owners. I mean, based in Nashville right now. And she's awesome. I've known her forever. And she hired me for consulting back in 2006 when I was charging $3,000 an hour and I would do a minimum of 2 hours. So it was $6,000. And I have a process called Opportunity Realization Roadmap where I would have people fill out a couple dozen questions about their business, their goals, where they want to go. And then we would have a whole dialogue about it. And I would, use my knowledge and experience to help them think through and figure out how to get to where they want to go to realize their opportunity. And after 2 hours, I had a group at the time called Platinum Plus. And it was, we had over 100 members that were service business owners, carpet and upholstery cleaners, fire and water restoration. And we would come together and we would spend a day or two just going over their businesses, having discussions, doing hot seats, all this stuff. And this started, I started my first coaching group, by the way, Pete, in 1998. With a guy named Jeff Smith, and it was called 2X Plus One, How to Double Your Income and Take an Extra Day Off Per Week. That sort of, and it was fantastic. But it was all over the phone, and there were no Zoom meetings back then. I mean, Skype didn't even exist. And so, but they're great. And we would have groups of people that would do this. And then I started Platinum Plus, and it was $1,000 a month or 10 grand a year. And it was fantastic, the results that the people were getting. So Robin Robbins, did a 2-hour consultation with me. At the end of it, she goes, why don't you have a platinum type group for information marketers? And I was like, well, it's not that I haven't thought about it, but like anything, you have to organize it. You have to create the curriculum. You have to deliver on it. You have to, it's a lot you have to put together. I go, however, if I did do that, what would you recommend I charge for it? She goes, well, I just paid you $6,000 for 2 hours and I got a tremendous amount of value out of that. And she's like, if you did it, I'd pay you $25,000 a year. And I said back to her, I'll go, okay, so if I did organize one like that, you'd pay 25. She goes, yeah, and I would refer other people into it. And I said, okay, let me think about it. So I then called up over the next month all the people that I would invite to come to my office and do, or my house and do these meetings that I do haphazardly for free. And I said, if I put some organization and structure around this, would you join? And everyone I talked to said yes. And I was like, I'm going to start a group of 20 people, 25,000 a person. I'm going to meet four times a year, one day at a time. I'm going to organize it, and it'll be $500,000 that I bring in revenue for a group that I curate that I want. I was doing it for myself, but I'm going to get paid to curate it. And, you know, I called up Robin and said, yeah, I talked to everyone. They're interested. So she's the first, she sent me a check, and I had everyone pay me with a check back then. It's so funny. There's less checks today than there was, you know, it's credit cards. Now people are paying me in cryptocurrency, which I think is hysterical. So yeah, send me Bitcoin, man. We'll do it for Bitcoin. So basically I took those checks and I crossed out the app, the account numbers, and we had a direct mail letter that we sent out to everyone that showed every person that was joining the group and paying, because there were no guests. Because a lot of groups try to pretend like people are paying members, but they're really not paying. They're just invited there. So every single, and the rules were everyone pays. No, I don't care if you're a billionaire, it doesn't matter. Everyone's going to pay. And it ended up being my favorite thing that I did. I never thought I'd turn it into one of the main things I do. Now, Genius Network, we have it's $35,000 a year at the time we're talking. And then we have a 100K group, which is people that pay 100 grand a year. And that's for people that have this, any current or existing business they want to grow and add at least $1 million to it or more. And then we have them fill out a tool. And if we feel that what we deliver and what we assemble can help them get there, then we'll invite them in. And if not, you know, we also refer people to lots of other groups. I refer a lot of people to Strategic Coach, refer a lot of people to different groups, depending on what they need. But, you know, it's no longer a mastermind. It is a connection network. And so we bring the right who's
together. So in the connection network, you get to see a lot of different leaders.
Tons.
Good ones, medium ones, not so good ones.
Yeah.
Some of them are really startups. Some of them are from multi-$100 million a year revenue businesses.
Yeah.
People work best in the presence of inspirational leadership, though, don't they? And I wonder, of all the people that you meet, can you recall a time when you worked with someone who you thought was an inspirational leader? And I wonder if you could just describe that to us and what made it inspirational to you.
Oh boy, I'm inspired by most of my members, because they all have, it's a capability network. It's a tribe of tribal leaders. And so I try to, Dan Sullivan years ago interviewed me for a book called Industry Transformers. And he tried to find, didn't try, he did. He found people that were the best or one of the best in the world in their category. And he did interviews with all of them. And I was, honored enough to be chosen to be one of the people, because I had transformed, out of all things, the carpet cleaning industry. You know, I built the largest training organization back in the 90s for people that are in the cleaning and restoration industries, where they do fires and floods and clean carpets. And I had transformed the way that they advertise. I was a big advocate against, I was very anti bait and switch advertising. I created something called ethical services, where people would not use misleading advertising and high pressure selling in order to get people. I created a lot of education based marketing. So I always loved industry transformers. And so I'm inspired by anyone. Like, look at you, Pete. You know, you've been to Genius Network, you've spoken, and, you have a capability that I don't have, enterprise value. You have an understanding and the depth of it that you've spent decades of your life learning. I have not. And so I crowdsource genius. And so when people have a particular skill or an area of genius in an area, I want to share that with other entrepreneurs, because you grow the most not by just increasing your slice of the pie. You grow by increasing the pie. And the number one thing that I'm looking for is perspective on how to think about stuff. Oftentimes, you know, I warn my members that you're going to hear all kinds of different ideas, and your FOMO brain is going to want to implement maybe all of them. However, listen to something, hear it, and if the enthusiasm is still there, you're not going to kill a good idea. Unless you share it with a bunch of people that like to, poo-poo all over every good idea, because there are, if you surround yourself by a bunch of unambitious, anti-capitalistic, freaking people that, you know, don't want any growth, then
that's lonely.
Yes, yes. So you, if you surround yourself with industry transformers, if you get yourself, many people that join Genius Network, they don't join because of who's in the room. Cause I bring high level people. I mean, super high level people. I mean, the last meeting we just did, I had Danica Patrick, I had Lance Armstrong, you know, and my deal with Lance is we'll do an interview, but you know, nothing's off limits. You can talk about, you know, hurting people. Can you talk about lying? And it was so interesting because he made one comment that I think he said something like, I don't know if it was 8 years, 10 years. He said, if you would ask me that question back then, he goes, I would have lied to you. And people that have watched that interview have been like, wow, you know, that's really impactful. But to be in the room with the dude and talking about all this stuff, you know, you don't even have to like the person and what he did, but you certainly can say, okay, you know, how does someone rise up to that level? And what happened, you know, what were the atmospheric conditions of that person's life that caused them to do what it is they did? That's a term from one of our members, Dr. Don Wood, who's a trauma therapist. It's like, I'm looking for the atmospheric conditions of industry transformers. What got them to become who they were? And as you're an adult, as a kid, you may not have any power or anything. You know, you could have a horrible childhood and that could forge who you become, good or bad, as an adult. As an adult, though, if you're read the right books, meet the right people, put yourself in the right rooms, you know, take care of yourself, then you can change the atmospheric conditions of your life and that of other people. So, to go back to the question, like, you know, Dan Sullivan, certainly, you know, Dan Sullivan has been in my group since 2010. He's been in my 100K group since we started in 2018. You know, he's a great coach to entrepreneurs. You know, there's, boy, I mean, I could name names, but they're industry transformers. And the people that I surround myself with purposely are givers. I want the greatest group of achievement-focused, non-narcissistic givers that I can put together. Because I've been to a lot of rooms where people are really capable, but their characters suck. So I make the difference between capability and character. There's a lot of people that are very capable, but they're not very good people. And not that they're not like bad as a human, meaning they do bad things. I do my best not to make bad behavior fundamentally you're a bad person, because if I looked at people that way all the time, then I couldn't help people that struggle with addiction, because there's no active addict that does not lie, cheat, and steal when they're in active addiction. But I've also seen, you know, let's take Andre Norman, you know, spent 14 years in maximum security prison. I've been funding him for 5 years. The guy's one of the highest rated YPO speakers in the world, a book ambassador of hope. I mean, he runs a prison now in North Carolina. He's in charge of a program that currently has 650,000 tablets in prisons that even has some of our content on it for entrepreneurship with Genius Network and recovery stuff for Genius Recovery. And this is a guy who spent 2 years in solitary confinement, was the number three gang leader in prison, really hurt people. Armed robbery got him into prison, 2 counts of attempted murder while he was in prison. I said to him, what's attempted murder? He said, well, you know, I stabbed a person 11 times was one of them. You stabbed a person 11 times and didn't kill him. He goes, well, I was good at stabbing, but not at killing. and then he had a spiritual awakening in prison and totally changed. And now this, we have saved lives. We dealt with the worst people going off the rails, and that guy's on a plane helping the families, you know, I mean, and just a huge contributor. In a past, you know, a few decades ago, he was a horrible person to his own admittance, right? And but he explains how he became that way, how he was brought up, what he was exposed to. So I'm around all kinds of, you know, I mean, hell, we went and spoke at the women's prison last month at Perryville in Arizona, the only women's prison, and spent 4 hours there. And, you know, so we do stuff that's so beyond just entrepreneurship. It's build a better entrepreneur. It's build a better human.
Yeah, I think about your hunters and gatherers, 5%, 95%. Hunters and farmers, excuse me. Thank you. And I agree with your characterization of that. And it's that juxtaposition of the highest performing entrepreneurs who are these game changers, these industry disruptors, part of the thing, it seems to me, is it's not that they're trying to think that way. It's that they genuinely think differently than the mass popular culture. And if you think differently than the mass popular culture, then by definition, that can be kind of an isolated, sometimes even a lonely place to be, right? Yet when I'm in the room with you at Genius Network, which is why I'm such a huge supporter of Genius Network, is I think that you get in the room and you immediately feel that you're in a community with other people who are also feeling that way. They're also the ones who are the independent critical thinkers. So when they're with the mass popular culture, they also feel isolated and alone. That's why, to me, the Genius Network works so well. When I think about you and I think about Genius Network, Genius X, Genius Recovery, I love marketing, Artists for Addiction, your project at Cleater, and many, many other projects. My experience has been that people like you who have a lot of fingers and a lot of pies, a lot of accomplishment, and yet you probably feel like you have a lot of potential yet to unlock. That those people, it turns out that when they get to be a certain experience, that some large number, I'll say 90% of the challenges facing them, turn out to be psychological, particularly for people who have sustained high output and success over long periods of time. That's one of the things I think it's really important to understand. Not flash in the pan, but sustained high achievement over 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. The thing to sustain all this is that we all need to do it a tremendous amount of self-care, right? When you start playing that deeper game, you need to put the practices in place that are the mind-body practices. Maybe for some people that means meditation. Maybe for some people like you and I at the hotel, that means working out. Maybe for some people that means breath work, yoga. What have you been doing in your routine that allows you, that's particularly interesting or energizing to you right now, that helps to sustain that positive energy that we need to be achievers?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I definitely think you have to engage the body because the issues are in the tissues. Many people have heard that before. And so whatever sort of psychological challenges and things, so much of who we are is biochemical. And if people want to understand the neurotransmitters and hormones, I would recommend reading the book Dopamine Nation by my friend Anna Lemke, which is brilliantly describes, you know, you take a starving mouse or a rat, put it, you know, remove the dopamine from this, the system of that, you know, mouse or rat, and put them in front of food, they won't even have the motivation to eat. So humans are the same way. If you're very depleted, it's a psychological game. And part of it is engaging the body. And look, you're a great testament to that. It's sleep. I mean, you know, how do you solve one problem that solves five problems or 10 problems or 50 problems? Well, for some people, it's just get another hour of sleep every night. Quit, drink more water. Get some sunshine. Don't eat shitty food. Don't have, you know, don't drink alcohol or consume so much sugar. Now, everyone's heard that message a million times, and you've heard it a million times because so many people don't do it. And the most difficult people for recovery, because I can always go back to recovery since I spend half my time in that world, the hardest ones to help are the smart ones. Because the really intelligent ones think that they can take something that's based on neurotransmitters, biochemical, and trauma, and they can outthink it with intelligence. And, you know, you can do the whole live with passion stuff for ambition all day long, but there are certain things in life where surrender is the key for all this. So my rituals, like right before I did this, we're having our conversation, I was sitting in a sauna, and then I got into a cold plunge for 2 minutes.
Right.
And I didn't have a chance to work out, do any cardio or lift weights. So I'm going to do that later tonight after I have a pretty busy day because I just want to get it in. So certainly physical things. But here's the way I would say, for the most part, I exercise, lifting weights predominantly, strength training. And it's not like I'm in the gym trying to, you know, I'm not competing for a contest, but we are running the Lean Life Challenge with 82 of our Genius Network members right now. And we've got 3-time Miss Fitness Olympia, Whitney Jones, and another pro athlete, Ashley Garcia, who lead the group. So I'm in the middle of, you know, tracking macros, exercising, measuring it. And when I do that, guess what? I'm in better shape. And when I have to then help guide other people with it, it forces me to do it. People are like, constantly all the time, I'm getting, you know, really nice compliments and acknowledgments about what I do in the field of addiction recovery. And I'll say, using a bit of self-deprecating humor, is it's not that I'm some philanthropic angel or anything. This helps me in my own recovery. If you Sure. have to hold yourself out as helping people with recovery, it is way harder to misbehave. And there Sure. is the child reptile brain part of me that wants to go be a degenerate, you know, for metaphorically speaking, like, let's just go drink a bunch of alcohol. Let's have a bunch of sex. Let's do a bunch of crazy stuff. And when you're helping other people, you know, you kind of help it. You're not kind of, you are helping yourself. So same way that you're like, Pete, do you really need to be giving out this sort of advice and helping guide people and writing books and all this? I mean, you've done very well in business. Yes, it's lead generation for clients if you want to look at the business aspect of it. But at the same time, you like to teach people because it helps you think through your own thinking. I mean, it's part of being a contributing person. So part of my stuff is you know, one of the ways to have really good, solid relationships is to live a life that people want to admire. Do the hard things. You know, life's easy when you live it the hard way. And hard if you live it the easy way, which is right. one of my friend Dave Kekich's credos. It's hard to not eat, you know, all of this seductive sugar and fast food and pizzas and chocolate and unhealthy chocolate, even though there's healthy chocolate. It would be so easy to just default to camouflage laziness all day long, but I really work to do that. And if I work to do that, my life works better. So I work out quite a bit, cardio. I love yoga. When I do yoga and I can be inconsistent with it. If I do yoga two or three times a week, my focus, my peace of mind, my anxiety drops. If I would have known how much cold plunging and saunas would help my stress and focus and anxiety level, I would have been doing it 10 years ago, but I was oblivious to it. That really helps a lot. And certainly the environment. If I'm around a chaotic, triggering, noisy environment, like I helped Ben Hardy with his book, Willpower Doesn't Work. It was originally called The Proximity Effect. And we're like, what does that mean? He's like, well, the environment has more to do with your success than willpower, because willpower doesn't work very well. It's like, well, why don't you call the book Willpower Doesn't Work? So that's what he did, you know, because that means we felt that was a far better title than The Proximity Effect.
I thought that was a great book too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Joe, you've developed these habits, these excellent habits to achieve goals and to have behaviors that you desire. And a lot of people who are listening to this podcast are highly successful entrepreneurs. They are thinking about good habits. As you have learned about your habits and good habits and how that helps you to control your behavior, your emotions, your feelings, your anxiety, or whatever, do you find that you have any kryptonite? I mean, is there an ultimate weakness in a form of an activity or a relationship or an environment which is supremely negative for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every Superman or Superwoman has kryptonite. And the more successful you are in one particular area, there's definitely something or someone that will take you down. It'll be, you know, for me, my core addiction was sex addiction, which is an intimacy disorder. The opposite of addiction is connection, as the line goes. And let me explain intimacy. My favorite definition of intimacy was given to me by an 80-year-old gay man who I never met in person over the phone. He's still around. He's probably close to 90 years old. And I had a friend that I had taken through a 12-step group back in 2003. I had 12-stepped him, which means when they come to their first 12-step meeting, you know, you're just there as another person in the group, just helping them, you know, with your understanding of, you know, 12 steps and just offering to, you know, be of support. And this guy has done extremely, I mean, we talk about it publicly. His name's Tim Ringgold. He wrote a book called, you know, Sonic Divinity. He's a great music therapist. And he introduced me to this guy over the phone. And the guy said, intimacy is a mutual exploration of a shared safe place. Abuse is anything that takes away the safe place. and addictions are what we do to make ourselves feel good when we don't have a safe place. And hunters are often in a state of fear. They're often in a state of having to protect the tribe. They're often in a state of having to be responsible for a lot of people. I mean, how many entrepreneurs have you helped that had hundreds, if not thousands of employees, so many demands,
right,
frivolous lawsuits where they didn't do anything wrong, but people were suing them because they were a target because of their successful, and success traps are harder to get out of than failure traps. And so for me, my kryptonite is if I am really stressed out, if I'm overwhelmed, if I haven't had enough to eat, if I'm in a halt state, which is hungry, angry, lonely, tired, that's kryptonite to me. So it might not even be, I could be in my office, like right now, I feel pretty good. You know, if I went all day without drinking any water or eating hardly any food, and I'm staring at a screen and my eyeballs are just like feeling like they want to fall out of my head because I'm just, you know, all the screen sucking time that you've been staring at a screen, or, you know, something, just a lot of complexity, I would look for a way to scratch the itch. And so my kryptonite is ruminating thoughts, betrayal, watching too much of the negative fear porn that the media shoves out continuously, and not putting up boundaries around the consumption of all of it. Because I'm a guy that's like, damn it, hunters get really annoyed and bothered if they have empathy when other people are getting hurt. There are narcissists and sociopaths and psychopaths that do really well in life because they do not have to devote any energy about caring for people because they don't have the ability to feel empathy for others. And it's actually an easier way to live for them because they can just rape and pillage and they don't even give a shit. You know, but if you're a person that cares and you're a giver, you're really bothered when you see people take advantage. And I get really bothered when I see, you know, especially people that don't have the financial means and the advantages of where they live. And, you know, I mean, I want to be careful to, you know, I don't like when people are like, you're just privileged, or you just have advantage. I'm grateful that I was born in this country. I'm grateful that I can walk and that I don't have some debilitating disease that is killing me. I mean, you know, I have my eyeballs, I have my hands, I have my arms, I can talk, I can hear. There are 3 billion people on the planet who would love to change places. They would be their dream come true if they could change places with me and you or most of the people listening to this for an hour because they, you know, they're laid up in a hospital. They're in some war-torn country, you know. So I don't take any of that for granted. And at the same time, I work really hard. And I want to, I resource myself. I do my darndest to produce more than I consume. I really work to be a producer in the world, not a parasite. And there are people that are parasites, you know, some with ill intentions, others because they just have no choice. And so,
I love your description of your kryptonite. It's very, very precise. My kryptonite particularly is, I think, passive aggressive people, for some of the reasons you say, is if I'm dealing with someone who, and you know me, Joe, what you see is what you get. If I'm dealing with someone who's agreeing to your face and then trying to erode what they talked about behind your back, that's just behavior that I find so depleting that actually it can bring out the worst in me. And you talked about ruminating thoughts. I had this feeling, you may have had this too. Sometimes I'm an early riser and I work out first thing in the morning. And I noticed that sometimes in the mornings I was feeling angry. And I was like, what's that about? And why? So what is it about anger or loneliness or lack, L-A-C-K, that can set me off? And, you know, what I realized was that my brain was firing synapses. This is an awkward metaphor, but it's almost as if the synapses, because they fired so frequently towards anger or lack or whatever, that there was almost like a groove in my brain that my thoughts were easily went back there.
Right.
And I had to really take that in hand and realize, no, actually, I'm going to reprogram that, that I'm not going to allow my brain to go back to that groove, to those synapses, because that may have been behavior which served me at one time in my life, but boy, it doesn't serve me any longer. But, you know, a big challenge, right?
Oh, no, I very much relate to that, too, because I think, you know, if you're running really fast, and I'm using this as a metaphor, so you're running really fast and you need to stop. You can't just stop. I mean, you will slow down. I mean, I can't run and be in full speed running as fast as I can and come to a dead stop instantaneously. It will take a few seconds to just kind of slow down, right? Unless you run directly into a wall. And if you run into a wall, you're going to hurt yourself. And oftentimes people run into walls. And so with changing like, let's take addicts. If you've conditioned yourself to be preoccupied and developed ritualization around a certain behavior or a drug, be it gambling or work or eating or gaming or sex, internet, drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, sugar, you know, all the different things that can become soothers of pain, you know, what was a little trail in the woods because you walked over it has now become a super highway because you spent so many hours of your life using that. And so to go to the synapses here and change it, you know, first off, the key is the awareness that, okay, this has taken me down a path that this is my kryptonite. Most people aren't aware that they even have it. So the awareness is one thing, but the awareness itself will not fix it. What you have to do is you have to find in another way or an alternative way to shut the door and do something else. Sometimes that most people can't do that on their own if they're addicts. But the difference between, you know, like addiction and a habit is just a condition. An addiction is it's more powerful than you. And it is something that has made your life unmanageable. It has negative consequences and you cannot stop on your own. And so that would be signs of unmanageability with addiction. However, you have learned, for one, that, oh, I was getting angry. You know, what is this all about? Why, you know, what is, you know, or if you run across a passive aggressive person, because since you identified that as, you know, one of your kryptonites, if you had to encounter 20 passive aggressive people all day long, by the end of the day, how would you not be angry? I mean, it, you know, in your conditioning, but because of it though, like the beauty of the awareness, here's what I think about. I think all humans, including myself, for the most part, think they're right all the time. And it takes an enormous amount of awareness to realize that, you know, we may think we're right and we could be dead wrong. And so now I go into life thinking, okay, where have I been convinced that I was right with making an investment in something or doing a business deal with this person, or, you know, yeah, I should get in a relationship, like a love relationship with it. I don't think there's hardly anyone that's not been in a business, friendship, or love relationship where at first they were like lusting and excited, and it turned out that this was an absolute nightmare. And how did I get into this? Or vice versa. For every person that you have gone to a workshop or a therapist to get over, there's a good chance that person or other people have gone to a workshop or a therapist to get over you. So, you know, they're like, and a lot of times it's not like we're ill-intentioned. You just happen to run across people that different value systems, wrong fit. And sometimes everyone's a good person, but you're just not good together, right? And then there's others where you deal with really despicable sort of people. So what for me is, for one, feelings are not facts. That I had to hear that a lot of times before. Just because I'm angry and I think things suck does not mean my life sucks. It might just be the state I'm in. And as a ADD, ADHD driven person, I can go on a roller coaster, you know, the default mode network that I've had lots of conversations with my buddy Ned Hollowell and Stephen Kotler. We've had full blown meetings at Genius Network about the darkness of the entrepreneurial brain. Not all of them, but some people, they are the most excited, driven, and like 10 minutes later, they're suicidal because they can just go in these mood swings of, and it's like, okay, these are wild horses. You got to harness them. In a split second, they can jump off a cliff and kill themselves and the person on top of them and others, or they can freaking do the most magical, amazing things in the world. So how do you build protection and resource that horse and not let that, you know, I use the $1 million racehorse, you know, I think you've heard me talk about that, where, you know, if you had $1 million racehorse, what would you do to make sure? Because every time that horse ran a race, you'd make $1 million. You would give it the best food, the best trainers, the best nutrition, the best exercise. You would choose the right races and not the wrong races. What wouldn't you do? You wouldn't have the horse up till 3 a.m. watching porn, snorting cocaine, drinking alcohol, smoking cigarettes. You wouldn't sleep deprive the horse. You wouldn't have the horse hanging around a bunch of loser horses. You wouldn't be overtraining the horse, because if you did that, you would take a great asset and you would deplete it and you would ruin it. And the punchline is, we're the $1 million racehorse. You know, you
right.
And yeah. So look out for the kryptonite, look for the right trainers, the right people, the right everything. That's how you're going to excel in life. And the last thing I'll say is, I think success is like fleeting. And when I say I think success, let me be very careful that word, because success for someone might be a lot of money, bunch of clients, fame, notoriety, best-selling books. Success for another person could have nothing to do with any of that. They just want to be a wonderful parent and inspire people. Other people want to be in great physical shape and contribute to their community. You know, other people's success, it might be completely egotistical and all materialistical, and others it could be, you know, a great depth of spiritual presence. So there's a million different ways to be quote unquote successful, depending on what, you know, it's not my job to tell someone what success is. All I can speak of for me, success is if there are certain things in my life that exist in a way, I'm being successful. And I have a whole criteria for that. And if I started smoking cocaine, if I started like for like a week or two, everything that I have right now would be completely thrown off. Now, could I come back from it? Yeah, maybe. It depends. But I think we're
either maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. So, there are certain things, don't go down that path because it could lead. So you're either on track and you stay on track by habits and rituals and people and decisions, and life is you get off track. Every single person has been in great physical shape. Then they start eating a little too much, or they're partying a little, or they, you know, they neglect exercise and they go on vacation. They catch a cold. They get completely thrown off. They get an injury. Someone very close to them dies. They get betrayed. They go through a divorce. It totally throws them off. So the key is, we're going to get thrown off track. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of how we resource ourselves. Like I said to a group of young entrepreneurs, if I would have known being successful was this much work, I would have stuck with being a loser. I mean, you have no idea how much work you're going to have to do. But I get myself back on track quicker than I used to. And so therefore, I have more consistent.
So I'm 66. I think you're about 10 years younger, aren't you?
Yep, I'm 56.
Okay. And you alluded to it. For me, you know, look, I cannot imagine a time, Joe, when I'm not working with entrepreneurs, trying to help them switch the light on. The way I do it, the platforms I use or how I work might evolve, but I can't imagine a time that I'm not doing that. Let's pretend you and I go to sleep tonight and we wake up tomorrow and magically it's March 27th, 2030. Not March 27th, 2024. And you say, Pete, remember 5-6 years ago we were on that podcast and I was telling you how things were going? Ever since I've been on that podcast, things have been going great in my personal life and my professional life. What happened?
Oh, well, I would be in a deep, caring, loving, intimate relationship.
Great.
Which I currently am. And so we'll see if I, you know, if I screw that up or not, or vice versa. Secondly, with Genius Recovery, we have a goal right now. Our crazy moonshot is to save 20,000 lives a year of the 100,000 plus that are dying from overdoses, which is you know, part of the Genius Recovery educational platform. So in terms of contributions, that I want to be in as good or hopefully better physical shape that I am today, strong, muscular, flexible. I feel my digestive system is working. You know, my vision, my hearing, you know, all the physical things that I have, I'm physically functioning because this is the vessel that carries me through life. So I'm in an environment that is very conducive to focus and peace. So when I'm working, it's a focus factory. When I'm not working, it's connection. I'm feeling deeply connected with myself and others. I hope to have taken some of the initiatives like my ghost town and the different companies that I have. And I have, you know, contributed to not only my own, growth financially and otherwise, but also to the people that work for me and help me build it. There are some that absolutely have helped me bake the bread, metaphorically speaking, so they deserve to be eating it and have part of it. And there's others that that are I want more elves and less half. Elf is people that are easy, lucrative, and fun. Halves are people that are hard, annoying, lame, and frustrating. So I want to have put up a better filter for that. And I hope that my podcasts and my books and my videos are viewed every single day by at least 1 million people, minimum. I mean, we already have days where that happens with some of my content already. I just hope right. that it's very consistent and every single day I'm putting, and that my recovery has been very solid, and that and more than anything that I've encouraged people and my level of consciousness. So I can look back at this interview that we're doing and say, boy, I said a lot of really stupid shit back then. And I hope that I've evolved beyond my own, you know, whatever. I mean, like, I don't ever want my, my ego. I mean, I want my ego to be so dependent on the validation of other people that I end up trying to get approval from people that don't care about me. And that's been one of my kryptonites too. I think, and I swear to God, I've talked to so many successful entrepreneurs where, you know, like the squeaky wheel gets the oil sort of thing. And then my friend Peter says the squeaky wheel gets replaced. There are certain squeaky wheels that do need attention and have your best interests. And there are some squeaky wheels that are just freaking persistently annoying and they don't really care about adding value to me or to you. They just want what they want and they make a big fuss about it. And oftentimes they get more attention than the people that are not bothersome at all and are some of the most caring people in our lives. But because they're so easy, we often give less attention to those people than the freaking annoying people that are just all about taking, taking, taking. So I want to have a better moat around the hard, annoying, lame, and frustrating people and an open door to the elves so that my life is being spent there. And I have the awareness to have enough courage to say things that I believe in, share my opinions. And I really hope we live in a country that the real warriors have protected from all the tyrants and the takers and the manipulators. And there's a lot of evil that's happening in the world. Always has been. It's happening at scale, though, at levels that in my lifetime I've never seen before. So I really hope, you know, 6 years from now that I can, you know, I can make some impact in the areas where I can make an impact and people don't think I'm a jerk.
Joe, a lot of people who listen to this podcast, you and I would know that they're super successful entrepreneurs, or some of them are want to be entrepreneurs. Many would, you know, I would say high performance or superior achievement is fairly common in the listeners.
Yeah.
But not all of them would describe themselves as either highly fulfilled or content. Would you describe yourself as content?
Probably not. There are moments where I have contentment, but I purposely, this is going to sound weird. I'm a person that will exchange peace for productivity, meaning I will suffer in order to get something done. I don't think I could do the recovery work if, like, I'm not content that there's a bunch of people dying in the world. I'm not content that there's all, you know, in the moment, and maybe it's just my own self-talk. Maybe it's a trick I play on myself. The moment I feel like, oh, everything's okay, then I quit, you know, doing stuff that where it's not okay for others. And I, believe me, I'm not trying to say here, I don't want anyone to perceive, because I, man, I cannot stand the people that try to act like they care about others, but it's just veneering cosmetic bullshit.
I mean, I don't think anybody would get confused about that with you, Joe.
Well, I hope so. I mean, we were on one of our calls yesterday and I said it was for Lean Life and it was with Whitney Jones and it was all our members that are in part of this fitness competition, right? This is Zoom. And I said, have you guys ever seen another business group where there's more people outside walking while they're on this right now, looking at their phones while hiking? We got Martha McSally, who's the first female combat fighter pilot in the U.S., used to be a senator and congresswoman. She's out hiking while she's on the call. We got a guy, Nell,
that's great.
Got a tank top on, and he's out hiking. And he said, you know, he goes, I just wanted to say, like, I've been in so many groups, but this is the first one where everyone just cares. Everyone really, and of course people care in other groups, but he said it in such a way to where everyone's like, right on, right on. And I was like, you know, that's awesome, because that's that, I want to have a profitable business. I want to make money. I want to sell stuff. I want people to like me. And at the same time, like I want it earned. I don't ever want to get to the point where I feel like I'm content enough with how good things are that I don't need to have to improve them. Because the moment that happens for me, I think you get lazy, and I don't want to be in that state. I'm always putting myself in scary situations. I read a book, years ago called The Contented Achiever, and it's, you know, kind of an interesting title. And, you know, you can be content in your own world, but if you're trying to do stuff outside of your space, like, look, I love Eckhart Tolle. I love Michael Singer. You know, there's very few spiritual leaders that are famous that I think are authentic. I should say very few.
I love Michael Singer.
There's a lot, but there's others that are a whole nother level of, I think, real and authentic. And, you know, I mean, I love Eckhart Tolle stuff. It's great to listen to. And I also can't say I've ever read The Power of Now, and then all of a sudden I know how to knock out a multi-million-dollar deal. So there's different forms of capability and exposure and things that we do. And, you know, both of us, I think, without being lavish, don't need to work another day in our life for quote unquote money and lifestyle. We do it because we're wired that way. We do it because we know it helps people. And
we have a calling.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other easier ways to make money than teaching business owners how to build and grow a business. I mean, there's more despicable ways that would make a lot of money that are a lot easier, but we wouldn't do it because we have a value system that says this is stuff that, you know, I don't care about people's capabilities. I care about their character. And when you merge it together. So for me, I just want to keep improving my character, and I will make mistakes. I will screw up. I will make amends to people that I will say things that I wish I didn't say. However, I think for the most part, I like the person that I am, and I still have low self-esteem. I still have self-worth issues. I still go back and ruminating things where I, you know, have desires and stuff that I wish I didn't have. However, I'm not hurting people. And mostly I don't want to hurt myself, because the moment you start hurting yourself and you allow that to happen continuously, then you probably start hurting other people, intentionally or not. It just is a byproduct of it. So 6 years from now, 10 years from now, I just hope to keep evolving and increasing my level of consciousness and exposing myself to curious, smart, capable people, because that to me is really fun.
And I would say one more thing, which is we have to help. We have to work together to continue to build legacy, but also enterprise value in your enterprises. Let's not forget that. We still need to get together for a day or two and have a brainstorming session about that. And I'm committed to that. So let's just put that on our calendars of things to do.
No, absolutely. And like for anyone that has not read your book, or let me just do a shout out for you. I mean, there is your knowledge and your wisdom and your insight. If there are certain things I wish I would have known you 30 years ago, because it would have completely changed the trajectory of how I thought about running a business. And one of the biggest things from just the creation of money, and the creation of wealth and the creation of legacy, if you want to, you know, call it that, has everything to do with how you set it up. And there are just certain things that it's not that I didn't set them up because I didn't want, I just didn't even know. And so like same thing with like, you know, I help people with marketing, and one of the biggest challenges that people have with doing good marketing is they underestimate the value of it. They just don't see it as significant. And the difference between being rich and being broke for some people could be the right sales letter. It could be the right messaging. It could be what you communicate. And so take that to enterprise value. You know, the difference between being rich and being broke and not struggling in the future, and, you know, because struggle, like no pain, no gain sort of thing. Well, there are certain pains that are actually worth going through because you're going to make progress.
Yeah.
There's other pains that are just painful and stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways, you're just trying to help people to quit neglecting watering the most important roots that they can and set it up so that you actually have a harvest that will last a long time. And I will tell you openly, I mean, I've neglected a lot of that, not intentionally. I just didn't know how to do it. And so, you know, it's great to, you know, discover wisdom and knowledge and capability and then put it into your life.
And there's plenty of time to water and fertilize that garden.
Right.
Not to worry. Yeah. So, last, you've been super, super generous with your time here, Joe, and your thoughts. Maybe this is the last question. What's one misconception that you feel like people have about you that is a misunderstanding?
Probably that I think some people mostly my marketing colleagues, they think I want to be acknowledged and recognized, which I certainly like appreciation and I like reciprocal people. What they, you know, there's a lot of plagiarism that takes place. And I cite people and quote people that aren't even famous, some that are dead, and I could take their ideas and I could take their thoughts and I could call them my own and no one would even know. And I'm constantly acknowledging people because I very much respect IP and I very much respect the origin story. I try to remember people that brought me and others to the dance party, metaphorically speaking. And I think that, you know, when you do something for somebody, reward people when earned, monetarily if possible, is something that Dave Kekich would say. And there's a lot of people that you open doors for that ask you to open doors, and you work really hard to do it, and they're total takers, and then and they're not reciprocal. And there's some people that try to open doors just so they can manipulate you and force you to do something for them when you didn't even ask that. And so what a lot of people in my people that I don't hang out with anymore misunderstand about me is they think, oh, Joe just wants credit for stuff while they're stealing my or other people's content. And it's like, no, it's not that I want credit. I just don't want to be taken advantage of. I don't like people. I was raped and molested as a kid. I have a real issue with people that do things without consent. Taking something from others without their consent, it's another form of rape. You can do it with needles and vaccines and mandates, and that's not an anti-vaccine statement. It's a mandate statement. Don't force somebody to do something because you think, you know, for their quote unquote safety or it's the right thing to do. Don't steal someone's product or service. Don't try to go into their groups and poach their employees or poach their clients. I mean, if you do it in don't use the word collaboration when you're not really collaborating. Don't try to, you know. So what people misunderstand about me is I'm a super collaborative, caring, reciprocal person, but only with people that are genuine givers. And takers are the ones that misunderstand my motives, my intentions, and things like that, and they misconstrue it. So I, like right now, there's a bit of a little bit of a war going on because there's a very famous guy, I'll just say his name, Jay Shetty, who there's negative articles that have been written, like everyone, their brothers are sending them over to me, and this guy, I'd even do an interview with him, and I've told people that are friends with him. You know, if he wants to do an interview and openly talk about it, I mean, I've had hard conversations. Hell, I just did an interview with Lance Armstrong, right? I mean, if he's willing to talk about why did he plagiarize? Why did he supposedly manufacture the story? Address it. But don't keep doubling down on it and trying to act like, you know, but you know, will he? Who knows? And that just reminds me of how many people in the marketing world are just bullshitting people. They're manufacturing stories. They're using their difficult life stories is woundology, you know, and I'd be very careful about that. I can tell people grueling stories about childhood. And I also will say that there's probably not a single person that's listening to us that has not had some horrible thing happen to them in their life or some difficult thing. So don't use it to manipulate. So I think what people misunderstand is I actually put up sort of an opinionated, persona, and I try not to have strong opinions that I publicly share if I don't have, I believe, enough evidence to back them up. You know, I'm very careful to say I'm an expert in this area if I don't have any background. Yeah. However, I will openly talk about stuff when I think I've been, I've received and studied and learned enough misinformation. So yeah, I think that's, you know, what people misunderstand is my intentions. I mean, I'm one of the nicest, most caring humans to my own capabilities. And, you know, if most of these people, even that I have annoyances with, if they were laid up in a hospital or something, I'd probably help them if someone genuinely asked. I've had to sit down and be a sober coach to people that, by all accounts, I think are despicable humans. But a friend asked me, will you meet with this person that has done horrible things? And I follow the 12-step tradition. You know, the only requirement for membership is if you have a willingness to get better. So even if people have done bad things, you know, if they're willing to say, look, you know, I apologize, I will make amends. I, you know, my own ego needed me to do this at the time in my life. I want to evolve. I want to be better. I will freaking take time and I will hold space and I will help. You know, I've sat with people when they're dying, you know, and you can't do, you're not going to fix that. You just can be present for them. So I think I'm a really empathetic, caring person. And I think a lot of people may not understand that about me. And that's at least what I think. And I will say this, Pete, you know, maybe I'm deluding myself, but I think that's who I am.
Joe, I'm a very tough grader. If you talk to my team or my clients or my wife, for that matter, my wife of 39 years, I'm a very tough grader. I would think, so when you answered, you know, what are we going to be doing in 2030? I think you are well on your way with tremendous momentum to achieving exactly what you set out yourself to do. And I just want to thank you personally because you've been a massive positive influence on me personally and on our firm. And, you know, I do reuse your materials and your thought processes. I give you attribution, but I do reuse them when I can because I think they're so powerful because they come from such a caring place. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. We believe that entrepreneur owner managers are the most powerful pro-social and pro-economic force on the planet. And it's for that reason that we dedicate our firm, Bigelow, to working exclusively with them. At Positive Enterprise Value, we freely share our learning so that you can absorb from the experiences of other private business owners with skin in the game, just like you. Bigelow is widely regarded as the M&A advisor that deals exclusively with high-performing entrepreneur owner managers. Our scrappy independent boutique firm only offers one service, that is to help build and someday capture enterprise value. You can find all of the episodes on this podcast on Bigelow's website, which is bigelowllc.com.